I was an Il Molino. A Soto Soto just talking women and vino. The contract like 91 Dan Marino. I swear this guy Michael Rapino's boosting my ego. Overly focused, it's far from the time to rest now. Debates growing about who they think is the best now. Took a while, got the jokers out of the deck now. I'm holding all the cards and niggas wanna play chess now. I hear you talking, say it twice so I know you meant it. Fuck it, I don't even tend it, they should know's in it. I'm authentic, real name, no gimmicks, no game, no scrimmage. I ain't playing with you niggas at all. My classmates, they went on to be chartered accountants or work with their parents. But thinking back on how they treated me, my high school reunion might be worth an appearance. Make everybody have to go through security clearance. Tables turn, bridges burn, you live and learn. With the ink, I could murder word of my nigga Irv. Yeah, I swear shit just started clicking, dog. You know it's real when you are who you think you are.
What's up? You are tuned into the Cold World Podcast. My homie is here, and I'm really excited that he is here. Stevon Cook, good brother, man. We've laughed about a whole bunch of stuff. We've worked together on things. Really got it in on that tip, man. I just respect this dude. I'm glad to see him. What's up, man?
What's up, Charles?
How you doing, brother?
Feel good, man.
That's what's up, man. So
I'm proud of you.
What you proud of, man?
I love the show.
I appreciate that, man.
I love your writing. Big fan.
That's what's up, bro. When last you listen? I mean, you Stevon just listened to all the shows because he was coming on the show today. I
mean,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, I mean, I don't usually prepare for conversations, but for you, I did.
You ain't got. We friends. You just gonna converse.
I know, but you know, it inspired me. It inspired me. It honestly does, because I'm like, why am I not doing the podcast?
I mean, it's hella easy. You should do one.
Yeah.
I enjoy it.
A lot to talk about, and you know, you have a voice that needs to be heard, and I just admire all the ways that you try to share it.
That's what's up. Also need to shout out my other partner Dave, who's here. He came out to visit from the Army, man. That's my dude, man. That's my homie, man. I'm gonna get him on the show soon. He over there chilling. I'm eating this dude can cook. He made like these wings that's gonna make me fat yesterday. Today he did these meatballs that's gonna make me fat.
Yeah.
Basically, I mean, if you look at him, he's trying to get me fat. But it's cool though. You know what I'm saying? It's all good. That's my homie though, man. Y'all gonna hear from him about this trip.
The food smells delicious, and I wish I was telling you earlier. I just met with a nutritionist yesterday.
You on that fufu diet?
Yeah, I'm on like I have to measure the amount of meat that I eat, and I gotta limit my amount of sugar intake. No fried foods. You know.
I know that hurts.
Yeah.
I try to cut down on the fried food. So I had a lot of it this weekend because my friend's here and I like make an excuse for it, but right. I'm going to pay for it. I got to get back in the gym.
Yeah.
But, well, Steve, I want you to tell folks how we met, man.
Yeah. It was 2000. It must have been the end of 2012. It was because.
It's been that long?
Yeah. I was interviewing to become a city, or not a, a New Leaders Council fellow. New Leaders Council is an organization that recruits and trains young progressive leaders to go on and do interesting things in a variety of different spaces. And I met you on an interview panel because I wanted to be a fellow and you were on the board.
That's what's up. You got to speak up a little bit, but it's all good. So, yeah, we met. I mean, I'm just saying, you soft spoken. I don't know. It's just, you got your Barry White on.
Yeah.
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 That's what's up.
All right, my fault.
No, it's all good. So, Stevon, yes, I was at New Leaders Council, which is an organization that I love. I put a lot of time into. I'm on the board, but I've been on leave since I messed up my knee. I don't know if I'm going to necessarily go back just because of my time constraints, but I still travel like the country and do the life entrepreneurship training, which is fun. I love doing that. But I think one of my roles on that board, man, I'm that pro black with the fist up dude. You know what I'm saying?
I
want to just make sure we found like black men to put on that council, and I just think that it pays off. And all the brothers that I know that I helped put on that council, along with my other cohort of directors, I think they've all gone off to do some great things, which leads right into, I mean, my homie, you just ran for school board in San Francisco, which is one of the toughest places to run in the country. How was that experience?
It was life changing.
I mean,
I think it was a real honor, honestly. You know, because I grew up in San Francisco, and we didn't really have folks on the board that reflected the lived experience that I went through coming up in the city. So my entry into politics, it was just like, you know, it was a whirlwind, and I learned a lot. I mean, I think the best part though was I have like these small memories about about being out in the community, and you know, I would get up like at 4 a.m. and put door hangers on in various places in the city, and I would go out into neighborhoods that people don't usually campaign in, you know, and I would meet these kids. And I would, so my highlight of campaigning and like, you know, all the blood, sweat, and tears that went into the process was giving my palm card to these kids in elementary school, you know, these young project kids. And I say that with love because I was one.
Mm-hmm. What's a palm card?
A palm card is it's like a postcard that has my face on it, mm-hmm. and my platform, my endorsements. So I would give them my palm card. And that had all my information about me, about my run, and I would tell them, I want to vote for you one day.
That's what's up.
So
a little sentimental, but you know.
I mean, because, you know, folks weren't telling me that. I didn't have candidates coming to my neighborhood trying to get votes that took the time to plant that seed, mm-hmm. you know. And we do a lot of that, I think, in education. We can talk a lot about education, actually, because a lot of the interventions that we try to involve our young people in, mm-hmm. or my entry into a lot of these spaces, it tend to be like these one-off opportunities where they want me to speak because I'm from a certain community, but and that's okay, but to have that one-on-one connection, you know, you never know who you inspire. And so
now that's what's up, man. I think that was dope. I think you ran a great campaign. It was tough, you know, it was a tough loss. It is what it is. I supported you.
Got a lot of support. I appreciate that.
Yeah, man. Yeah. My wallet felt it. So
we raised a lot of money. Thank you for everyone who gave to the campaign.
Yeah, I messed up. I don't get my money back. It's just gone. But you know what I'm saying. But it's cool though.
Well, we went to a good cause, and we got a lot of votes.
My money going to the cause. You losing is a good cause. You know,
for the people that we inspired and impacted, absolutely.
You my dude, man. I would just give you the money just cause.
I feel that way. We got over 51,000 votes.
That's what's up.
That sits more than ATT Park, you know. And people gave from all over the country. Like, you live in Oakland, mm-hmm. and I know you love education, but you don't have any real stake in San Francisco public schools directly. But you want to see good people in leadership roles, and people who gave, you know, believe in that. So
yeah, I mean, you know, especially because it ain't but 7 black kids left in San Francisco public schools. Nah, so
it's 8.
Yeah. it's you know, 8. That's a bigger conversation, man. But nah, I support you. I think you know, I think that high tide lifts all boats though, man. So I do want to see, you know, I want to see some change there, man. But I think you ran a good campaign, man. You worked it. You had a plan, and that's, you know, I think this is a character building moment, and if you do it again, when you decide to do it again, you'll be even more prepared.
Yeah. We lost by 0.5% of the vote. Mm. So, you know.
Now, keep it 100, right? Like I would have been, I am a fiery, like, competitive dude. Like, I kind of get mad. I kind of be up in people's faces. How upset were, like, I saw that, you know, you had your concession speech, and it was like, oh, man, congratulations, this, that, and the third to all the other people that won. But, like, how upset were you, though? I'd have been pissed.
Well, you know, the day of the election and after the day after the election, it wasn't clear because the margin that I was behind by was about 2,000 votes.
Yeah, margin of error and all that good stuff, too.
And right? There were still, like, 70,000 votes that hadn't been counted. So people were telling me, you know, congratulations, you ran a great race. Too bad you didn't make it. And I'm like, well, it's still like 60,000 votes to count. Like, hold on. You know, so I was holding on. Because, you know, you don't get into politics, I don't think, unless you got a lot of nerve and that, you know, you're willing to go out and say that I deserve your vote over the people you're running against. And the thing about my field was, you know, the Chronicle, it reported on it that it was like one of the most qualified fields. There are a lot of good people that ran, but you know, I didn't run to come in second place.
I went to grad school with one of the cats that won.
We was
the two black people in the MPA program at San Francisco State.
Yeah. Shaman had it was the second race. He ended up making it, And, you know, he's a great guy. He's a real stand-up guy. And actually, the big thing, I mean, in San Francisco, we talked about the black population in San Francisco being a black candidate. Yeah,
two Negroes couldn't win. That's what you basically say.
That's what I'm getting at. But it was the funny thing about, you know, running in the same field as Shimon was three people win, right? And so I don't know how much mm-hmm. Your listeners know about school board races. But in my race,
San Francisco school board is actually really different too, because here we run in districts. So.
Right. So yeah, it's a citywide campaign. There's seven board members, but the races are staggered 4 and 3 every 2 years. I was in a 3-seat cycle, and there were 9 candidates trying to win 3 seats. The seats go to the top 3 vote getters, so 3 people win. But the way that identity politics works in San Francisco, you know, we have this mark of being a progressive city, but people want what they call a balanced slate, which means that they can only choose. They want to try to cover all their bases with the candidate field they put together. You know, so they want to get their African American, their LGBT representative, the Latino representative, their Chinese. They want to have all that. You know, they can't have two of the same, right? Mm-hmm. Because they want to present a diverse candidate field, but we ended up turning a lot of heads because most people considered us the two strongest candidates. So out of a field of 9 people, the teachers union, one of the most powerful endorsements, only endorsed 2 people, mm-hmm. and they were the 2 black male candidates. You know, so that whole mark around, you know, we turned a lot of heads. That's
okay. I mean,
you
know. Well, I think that's dope, man. But you know, I feel that when one door closes, God opens up another one. So congratulations on, you are now, my friend is now the CEO of something, effectively passing me in social strata.
Yeah, man.
Life
is good.
Where are you at? What are you doing?
Yeah, I just got hired as CEO of Mission Bit. It's a nonprofit in San Francisco that teaches coding to kids in public schools. Right now, we run about 5 classes that teach 90 high school students how to code. We're launching now a hacker lab where we'll have, you know, a bunch of incredible rare equipment for teachers, for young people to learn, you know, how to use a 3D printer.
Mm-hmm.
If they have their own coding or projects they want to develop, they get hands-on mentoring, and we have a summer mentor component. So we a summer mentor / internship component. So we have like 20 slots available where we send students to Facebook and LinkedIn and a variety of different tech companies to get some paid on the job experience.
Okay, that's what's up, man. You excited about it?
I'm so thrilled. It's crazy. Like, I mean, how much we can do with this opportunity, because for young people to learn how to code in the Bay Area, the options are really limited, and it's a hot area that people are trying to get more involved in. There are a lot of organizations that have already been in the space doing good work that is very segmented, focused on particular demographics. You know, Black Girls Code, what Kimberly's doing is amazing. Girls Who Code, code.org is like a more national organization. Mm-hmm. But Mission Bitch Charge, I mean, the communities that I work in, like those low-income, disenfranchised communities, those are obviously a priority for me to get those young people a pathway to this learning so they can pursue those careers. But there's such a void across all communities for people to have a structured way to really learn, you know, how to code and to unlock all their creativity, right? Like, you know, kids are just off the hook with all the stuff they can come up with. So to give them the basic skills and to say, just have at it, let's see what you come up with. Like, you know, when you go into a Mission Bit classroom, it's like magical. It's like, it's crazy how much energy there is for kids just running wild with some of the basic things they're learning, you know. So it's an exciting thing to be a part of.
I think that's dope, man. I think, you know, I've done a lot of work around young people and youth development, and I mean, I'm pretty much agnostic to the different pathways. I just want, especially young black kids, to just be able to get exposed to as many different opportunities as they can, right? So whether it be through coding, whether it be through landscaping, building homes, I just think that we just need to open up the options and the floodgates for our kids and let them make those decisions. So, you know, I think the thing that I didn't necessarily have was choice. I didn't see those different things growing up. What I saw was, you know, the cats that did music, to catch that old Diesel on the corner and then to catch that play ball. And so I ain't want to do music. Yeah. Definitely wasn't built to sell rocks. That wasn't me.
Right.
So I played basketball. Yeah. And then things started to open up for me a little bit later. But had I spent time, like, maybe learn how to code, had I spent time with a sports agent, had I spent time in, like, a video game developer's office or things like that, there might have been other options that I felt would have been open to me instead of me playing catch-up in college. And I think that – so I think it's dope what you're doing. I think that both our passions to kind of work with young people stem from really personal experiences that we had. So, I mean, Stevon, like, how did you grow up, man? Like, I mean, you and I – these folks know my story because I talk about it. Right. It's kind of on my sleeve. Like, like every other, like, minute you hear about how my parents was crackheads. So, for you
– yeah.
I mean, what is it that drove you to do this work? Because this is the thing, brother. Like, because this is what I be thinking about. I'm going to keep it all the way real with you because I got my beautiful next to me. It's Hennessy and Grandma Ye because I'm an adult and I work hard.
Right, right.
So.
Keep it real.
Always.
Yeah.
And it's really good. Too bad you don't drink.
Yeah. Nah, I'm sipping water.
Really sucks for you.
The H2O.
That's what's up, man. Give me this H2. No, boy. it's really good. I'm glad I can afford it nowadays. So. I was broke. I got paper now.
Balling.
Not even close.
Jim Jones.
So, I mean, so for you, I think, you know, like, with your story, what is it that kind of pulled you in? Because, like I said, man, there's a bunch of times, like, this is frustrating work. It's really frustrating. And I see the needle move every now and then. Like, I see kids that have graduated, and, like, I've gone to those graduations and those college graduations, and we getting old.
Yeah.
But now, you know, it's some days, bro, where I'm like, you know what, man? I probably could have did the hedge fund thing. I probably could have, instead of going for the MPA, did the MBA and, like, knocked that thing out. Yeah, man, listen.
You feel that way?
Check this out, bro. I got bills, my dude. Yeah. How much you got on student loans?
Not much.
Oh, nothing. Yeah. That's, yeah. Not
I have
much.
A little bit. I'm probably going to pay it off my next
check. Oh, you're probably going to pay it off in your next check.
Yeah, probably get rid of
bruh,
it.
Bro, I'm not paying my student loans off till forever. So, it's different. And I'm trying to buy a house. So,
right. Congratulations on that pursuit.
Don't congratulate me yet because I ain't got
you're
nothing.
You're speaking into being, man. You're speaking into being.
That's what's up. We're gonna. You know what we should speak into being? My damn loans being gone. That's what we should speak into
That's
being.
That's how it starts.
Bro, I'm telling you, Sally Mae is the only woman that makes me cry. She makes me cry every single month. That check comes, not check,
it's good to
that
cry,
bill.
You know?
That's she cleanses my palate. I'm telling you, hey. I hold like onto like a body pillow when that payment comes. So, what is it for you that drew you to do this type of work?
Yeah, it's funny because, you know, when I was in high school. I used my education to escape my community. That was like, you know, I found out that I can use school to leverage a way out of San Francisco. Then that just became it for me. You know, I grew up in public housing in San Francisco. I kind of bounced around different neighborhoods, Section 8. And my parents also suffered from drug and alcohol addictions. You know, it was a lot of traumatic experiences. They have since... they're in a better place now. We have a better relationship, but it was really tough when I was a kid. So I moved in with my grandparents, my sister and me, when I was 10, and my grandmother was just kind of on my line. I had one of those old school church every day, you know, was in several different church related things, took me to everything, choir, all that. So my grandma was just on my case all the time. So it's like when I get to like the escape piece in high school, it's funny you mentioned that, like you found basketball as a sense of like security, or you know, a sense of community, something that you fell in love with. I had all the same, we all had the same influences. It was all the same, like entertainment, sports, you know, an alternative lifestyle in the drug world, like all that was the same for me as it was for a lot of kids that grew up in the inner city. But I didn't fit into any of it, you know. When I was a kid, it was funny. Like when I grew up, when I was a kid, I really wanted to go to the library, right?
You what?
I really wanted to go to the library.
That's cool. How often did you get beat up?
When I was
I just want to know. I don't know.
When I was a kid, and my mom would be like, "Why you want to go to the library? Why don't you go out and play? Don't be no square, right? Or I would tell my dad I wanted to, you know, I wanted to fly airplanes. Uh-huh. And he'd be like, well, we're going to take you to get some boxing lessons. Cause if you're going to be a punk, you're going to be out. You know,
so did you take the boxing lesson?
So I would, but I was like, cool, like I'll take boxing. You know, I wanted to.
That's dope.
I love boxing to this day. I don't box, but all those, you know, masculine qualities associated with boxers, I wanted to do, and it was a structured activity that I was really yearning. I was yearning that, and I didn't find it in sports because I didn't really connect with the other, you know, kids that I was like playing with. So I really felt a lot of my childhood, I felt really isolated, right? Because I grew up the kid, like, big head, too dark, hella nerdy.
Hanging out at the library.
I mean, I didn't really hang. I was discouraged from doing that. And I think that's kind of sad, though. I mean, that's really devastating, really, if we are, because too many of our, like, black children especially are being talked out of or discouraged from academic pursuits.
Oh, definitely.
You know, and it's like it becomes this thing about culture, like there's a lack of authenticity in your blackness if you want to do certain things, you know, and that's probably one of the biggest things holding our young people back, you know. So it's that sense of, you know, wanting to be white if you want to pursue school or whatever, that still exists. It's segmented within a certain aspect of the black community, the black experience. It's not like as widespread as it was. Mm-hmm. But a lot of the kids that I work with, mm-hmm, are discouraged like I was when I was that age. But I found some sense of pride in being an outcast and started to develop great relationships with my teachers when I was in high school. And then I had some summer academic experiences that really opened up my eyes to the world, right? Mm-hmm. I went to Stanford one summer, met kids from all over the world, whose parents were very wealthy. And those kids would ask me, they would talk about, you know, one guy, his dad was a dentist in Beverly Hills. His zip code was 90210, right? And I just thought, I didn't know that was a real place. I had no idea that
you thought it was like Zamunda?
I mean, I heard of the show, but I didn't know it was named after an actual zip code. That's like, I didn't make that connection.
And you know where Zamunda is, right? I mean, you know where Zamunda's from, right?
Nah, you talking about Coming to America?
Oh, thank you.
Are you testing my blackness
right now? I just wanted to ask you if you knew what I meant when I said Zamunda.
I've seen Coming to America like 30 times, man. I know that. But the kids would ask me, you know, oh, what do your parents do? Just trying to, that's how they connected with each other. Mm-hmm. And for me, a sense of shame and like embarrassment came up because I didn't want to have to say, like, I don't know where my mother is. Mm-hmm. Or my dad is out of work. I actually haven't seen him in a long time. So I would say, oh, well, I live with my grandparents. And they would say, oh, well, where's your mom? And then I was either forced to tell the truth and reveal some personal stuff about myself or lie. So I chose to lie. And I carried that, right? So in those moments, I became committed to having a future where I would put myself in a position so when my kids had to answer that question, they wouldn't have to feel what I felt. Mm-hmm. And I knew in order to get to that place, I was going to have to compete. Talk about competition earlier. Compete against the students in the programs I was in. And I got a sense of how behind I was in my education. So I saw that end path into going to a great college. I got a sense of how behind I was in my learning when I met these kids because they had just so many more advantages than I did.
Yeah.
So I went back to school with like a sense of purpose around just like completely giving myself to learning. And I did that, and you know, I went to Williams College and I had a whole set of other experiences.
Where's there. Williams?
Williams is in Massachusetts. It's a small liberal arts school. You know, we constantly top the Forbes list of best college in the world.
I mean, pop your collar, it's good.
I mean, I don't really like.
I got that good state college education, B.
I don't do that often, but sometimes you just gotta stunt and let people know.
You just gotta stunt. That's what's up.
Yeah, you gotta stunt.
That's cool.
Yeah, they just tweeted out today. Williams College tweeted out that I was hired as CEO to Mission Bit, and so.
That's, you know, what's up. How'd that make you feel?
It was interesting because I wasn't the best student at Williams College, you know.
You finished though.
I finished.
See, that's what I always tell kids. Nobody asks you what your GPA is when you graduate from college. Unless you're going to grad school, like You just need to finish. Nobody asked you how long it took.
Yeah.
Just finish.
Yeah, yeah.
So, I mean, that's interesting, right? So, it's funny because I was raised by my grandmother, like, in conjunction with my parents because they was in and out of prison up until I was 9 because that's when she passed away. I think it's interesting that you moved in with yours when you was 10. It's like a baton. We didn't even know. This right. is like,
yeah.
this is already written, B. Uh-huh. So, real quick, let me ask you a question. Keep it real. At 16,
yeah.
what was your life goals at 16? Do you remember? I remember my life goals at 16 very vividly because they was pretty rudimentary, but... What was your life goals at 16?
Yeah, I think it, I mean, they changed.
Now, I know they changed. At 16 years old, what did you want?
I wanted to be, so in high school, I would say I wanted to be the governor of California.
In high school, you wanted to be governor of California?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's what's up. Let me tell you mine. Because you have this altruistic, natural thing, right?
But that changed, though. My first year of college, I wanted to be P. Diddy. That was like my goal. I think, like, somewhere in the middle of college, I wanted to direct music videos, which I did. I ended up directing music videos over my summers.
Who you direct?
Who in the city?
Yeah, what video did you direct? Well, name these people.
God Bless the Dead, Jacka.
Uh-huh.
Just passed. I worked with him. I worked with Bullies with Fullies, Juice, okay. SMR. And I worked with a number of other Bay Area artists. Like, some people who had big hits at the time when I was in college. And a lot of other folks.
I got you.
So I did about nine
videos.
It's
like that Big Rich era and like.
Right. Yeah. I never worked with Rich. My homie who I started my company was called Stay Sharp Films. And it was like I got my first real hood pass. So I grew up with people from the hood, but you know, our lives sort of went in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
We got reconnected through my video projects and I met folks that were that were drug dealers and pimps and were very well paid based on these like lifestyles that I don't condone. But, you know, I went to all these places that were just like an eye-opening experience. It was crazy.
That's what's up. So at 16, my aspirations was to have a car. I needed the whip.
Yeah, I wasn't into yeah.
have some fly jet. Well, you lived in San Francisco.
Yeah,
it's a different. I lived all over the country.
Know, we all want cars. I guess that's like you know.
Yeah, but it's not. Well, it's but
ooh, a car. You know.
Nah, I mean, but even the difference between Oakland and San Francisco around needing a car is really different, yeah, right? Like you can't. You grounded, and if you live in other places, you know what I'm saying? Like San Francisco, the transit go everywhere.
Uh-huh.
So I wanted a nice car, on things, rims.
Yeah. Thanks.
Pretty girls.
Okay.
S.
Those are nice.
Yeah, I wanted those real bad. And what else? Oh, and some Jordans. Jordans. That was it. Like in college, that's when I kind of changed and matured a little bit. I'm gonna keep it 100 with you. I didn't have this altruistic view that you had. What happened is the reason why I didn't sell drugs, let me tell you. One, because I was like 4'10" and I didn't like getting hit. That was just one thing. I didn't like confrontation because I was little and I couldn't fight. Two.
I can see that. You're not fighting.
Two. I mean, you can run up now. I'll punch you in the gut. But I'm bigger now. You feel me? And two.
That's the general you.
My dad. you don't want these problems, Steve. You know my temper. And two, my pops just was a horrible drug dealer. Like, if this Negro was somewhat remotely good at selling drugs to where I could get the family business, I probably would have did that, right? Like,
it's probably a blessing there that he wasn't.
Yeah, maybe. I kind of think I would be a good criminal at this point in life.
Now
but
you host
kind of smart.
You host the cold world.
I'm just saying, I feel like I could have.
You still came up.
But, you know, but that just wasn't my elk. Like, it wasn't like I just was, like, this chosen kid or I had, like, all these skills and talents. I just was an opportunist. I just didn't see no opportunity in selling drugs. Like, so maybe, like, my friend Donald, who I talk about a lot, who passed away, his picture's up on my mantle. Like, he saw people in a drug game do it and be successful. And he was, like, you know, he played football. He was, like, a cool, soft-spoken dude. But it wasn't nobody you was going to run up on. Like, you probably get a yama in your face. You know what I'm saying? Like... You don't want that. You don't want bullets coming at you. So, it makes sense that that's the path he took. And he was actually really successful in it. Like, I would venture to say that as successful as I've been in this realm, he was probably on the same success track. Just with his activities just were illegal. I say all that to say, is that I'm where I'm at sitting with you right now just out of circumstance. Like, I'm just somebody who could, like, adjust really well. So me living in Kentucky, Chicago, and then here, like, I just, you just learn how to adjust quickly. And you learn how to, like, do what you need to do. So, I mean, I think that you, I would say out of our group of friends that we share, I'm probably, maybe I'm the hood dude out of our group of friends. I don't know. Like, when we together and we, like, are talking, you know, it's, I know you'd be a little worried when I be talking to white folks. Like,
I love all people.
No, I say I know you be worried when I'm talking to white folks. You just don't know what I'm gonna say. Like,
oh, what you gonna say?
I kind of, I mean, I just speak my mind. I don't, I mean, listen, bro. Let me share how I view life. I'm not supposed to be here. Like, statistically, I'm supposed to be dead, jail, supposed to have a whole bunch of kids right now, whole lot of stuff, right? But, so I'm playing with house money. And that's how I live life. Like, everything that I do from this point on is a bonus. It's it's all a bonus, bro. Like, when I first got on a plane, I remember the first time I got on a plane, I just never thought that I would get on a plane. When I graduated, I said this in the last show, like, I never celebrated my master's degree because I'm so used to stuff getting snatched. Like, that's just, I came from the hood. Like, things just didn't last in the hood. It just didn't. You know what I'm saying? People get your hopes up and then things just kind of stay the way they are. So I didn't see this, I know you didn't listen, but I'll explain it to you. When I graduated from getting my master's degree, people was like, ain't you gonna celebrate? It's like, no, because it's not real. I need that paper. Like, give me my diploma. Like, I don't want nothing coming back and being like, oh, you owe this much money. Oh, you didn't actually pass this class. Oh, you need to do this. Because just in my life, like, things had just been taken away like that. So then when I got the diploma 5 months later, 6 months later, it was, I wasn't going to celebrate then because it was beyond the fact. Yeah. But that's just the hood mentality that I got.
Yeah, I think a lot of us who grew up in poverty and that saw a lot of, like, trauma growing up that made it out and that are continuing to try to strive for more, you know, a lot of us share that sense of, like, you know, is it real? I'm not done yet. You know, I honestly think that we are blessed because we got drive. And
that's one thing we probably both do have.
Yeah. And so, you know, but it all comes from that sense of, like, we had a set of experiences and went through a certain amount of circumstances that required us to develop, you know, a certain grit and tenacity and yearning, a yearning for, like, something more. So, you know, I feel like so many of our folks that we grew up around didn't get captured into that, and it's unfortunate, but it's not like it's not possible for more people to make some type of shift to develop that mentality, because that really ends up being a difference, right? You know, we both had positive adult examples, even for a time that gave us a sense of, like, our worth. You know, you talked about it with your grandmother. Mm-hmm. I had it with my grandmother. Some people get it with a teacher, right? But somehow we bought in. We bought into this mentality or this idea that, you know, something beyond where we were at was available to us. We believed it in enough to pursue it, and then we came into this opportunity that we just seized, you know?
Now, that's a good point. That's very poetic, Steve-On. This is why I hang out with you. Like, I hang around with you because you make me look better. Because that was poetic and that was very well said.
Okay.
That's not really my reality, though. Let me tell you. I'm going to keep it 100 with you. Like, it's just me and you talking. Forget this microphone. You want to know why my drive is what it is? So, growing up, I resented my parents so much that I didn't want to have nothing to do with anything associated with them. I didn't want them getting credit for my success.
It was the same for me.
Like, any of that stuff, right? So I didn't pursue school or work as hard as I did, like, just out of this altruistic thing around, like, that's the thing you should do. I just wanted to be way, way, way better than, like, I just wanted to do it better than how they did, right? So I wanted to, like, I'm the kid that I couldn't wait to, like, graduate from high school because I was out. Like, I'm like, no, I'm living on campus. Like, this is what's going to happen. You know what I'm saying? And so what drove me was that I didn't want to have nothing that resembled, you know, my parents, like, about me. And the funny thing is, right, is that that very thing is kind of, like, the similarity between me and my pops. Like, we actually are really similar people. We similar people, and, like, we both got really short tempers. I mean, really extremely short. I have no patience for people.
Right.
I'm just an inherent loner because I lived all over the country. I made new friends every few years. Like, it just... friendships and relationships just don't hold the same girth with me as they do with the average person, right? Like, roots don't necessarily mean as much to me, right? Because not right now. Like, that's something I'm working on, but not necessarily right now because that's not how I grew up. I grew up with, like, bruh, I went to 11 elementary schools, bruh. Like, you know what I'm saying? So everything is temporary.
Right.
And people are temporary. Yeah. So I would like to believe that I made those decisions that I made because it was the right thing to do, and that's just the way you... Nope. If I could have been Tony Soprano, if I had the makeup to be Tony Soprano and still do better than my parents did, there's a really good chance that that's what I would have done. Like, and I think that... I think I'm blessed because that's just not how it worked out. That's just not what God had for me. But, I mean, I'm just... I mean, you know me. I'm a really... Like, when you... This is the thing, right? So you and I are very similar in a lot of ways, and we're also very different. You are a very, you are a nice guy. You are a warm guy. You are welcoming of all people. You welcome everybody in. Like, you make sure people are good. You're the type of person that when people, like, leave your house, you, like, call them to make sure they got home. Like, you just a very, like, that's, nice, friendly
last,
person.
That last part is more like you, though, than it is like me.
Not really.
Yes, it is.
Once you leave my house, you that's your business. I think for me, where it's like, like, I don't put that much stock in relationships. I don't put that much stock in people. You know that. Like, I just, it's just, like, we got a job to do. This is what we doing. Like, let's make sure that happens. And some people just stick, right? I feel like, you and I just stuck. You know, like, we kind of met and we just kind of hit it off. But for one you, there's 30, 40, 50 other people where it's like, oh, that's a cool person. And I'm like, keep it moving. Uh-huh. And I think that for me, it's that appetite, that hunger to kind of be successful. I mean, me and my parents have a good relationship now.
Right, right.
You know, I mean, I actually appreciate that drive when it was there because it was something that kind of motivated me. But, you know, when I think about, like, that general hunger that I got, I've busted just about every first in my family, whether it's like, you know, not going to prison, not going to graduate from high school, graduate from college, going to grad school, not having kids before I, like, got out of school, like, making bad decisions, putting my hands on women, like, a whole bunch of different things, shooting guns, shooting somebody, you know. So there's a lot of firsts that I've had, but I think that general hunger, like, I care about a people, like a group of people, more than I care about an individual person, if that makes sense. Like, bruh, anybody that gets in that way of, like, me and what I perceive as success,
mm-hmm.
it's a problem, bruh. Like, I don't, it's just a problem. And I think if I'm being totally honest, like, I'm not going, bruh, I've lived in shelters, dog. I'm never going back to that.
Mm-hmm.
I will put a mask on and rob somebody, and I'm never going back to that. It's just not going to happen. And it's just a very different Charles that'll come out. Like, if I need to eat, like, I'm going to eat. And so I just choose to eat and put my energy into my work the way in which I do. Now, what suffers from that is, like, your personal friendships. Like, you and I haven't seen each other in a minute. You know what I'm saying? That's probably a lot largely my fault because it just is what it is. We both busy. But I didn't do all I could do.
Like, I called you.
I didn't do all I could do to, like, make sure that we saw each other.
Put you on G-chat.
My relationships with, like, women, well, you know, how those fall. Like, you try something and then it's like, man, I got to get this paper. Like, so.
Okay.
I just keep it real. So, I mean, I think that we have a lot of similarities, but I think there's also, like, a lot of differences. And also, brother, I mean, I'm just showing you for the standard brother that you are. I like the villain role. So, that's how I view it. I think that we have a lot of similarities.
Yeah,
with.
I think, yeah, I mean, I don't really, I think we share a similar upbringing and we're both, I think, rare in these streets. And, you know, and I understand you and how you operate, right, at some level. And I think what
I should let you describe how I operated. That probably would have been more entertaining. Because I'm interested to hear that.
Well, but. I mean, you know, it's I'm sure you are. But I think
that's interesting.
Yeah, I think it's you know, I'm a person that values relationships with people that are candid and authentic and don't really apologize for who they are. You know, because when you maneuver in politics, you don't get much of that. Mm-hmm. You get a lot of positioning. Even people with big egos and all this stuff, kind of stuff. Like,
I definitely kept it real with you during the campaign.
And a lot of different places. But, you know, it's, I think that sense of community and brotherhood, right? I mean, and sisterhood. I really search for that in a lot of the relationships that that I've been, I think, privileged to, a lot of people I've been privileged to meet. So yeah. So I am reaching out to you, right? Oh, how you doing, Charles? Texting you. I called you during the campaign after I had like a bad night or whatever, or I hit you up on GChat. Is because you know, I think you pretty much know what you're gonna get when you call Charles.
Okay, I'm gonna take that as a compliment.
Yeah, I mean, you know, people need those real people in their life. You know, it's people who won't mince words, aren't afraid to be honest, and aren't necessarily looking to tell you something so they can benefit themselves personally in some way. All the differences around how we present to the world, how we engage with our friendship circles, like, you know, how we think about opportunity or the extent we're willing to go to survive or live or whatever. You know, you know, it's all that varies based on the individual. But I definitely think that, you know, you distracted me taking pictures.
That's right. I mean, I'm just for your show, brother. You know what I'm saying?
I know. Yeah. So yeah. I really appreciate it getting to know you over the last few years. You're definitely one of those people in a tight circle of folks that I really trust and admire. So I think that's kind of how I see us as people who are friends, so just like men that are connected to each other. That's kind of how I view the relationship. I haven't necessarily thought about all the similarities and differences.
You haven't? You know what? I think because it's so few black folks
I don't think it really matters the things that separate us, because, you know, we do have like similar things we're trying to do out here. You know, there are, and folks need both of us for what we bring to the table. Mm-hmm. So you know, when we get together, you know, it's a powerful thing.
I agree with that. I think, like I said, I think that you are genuinely a good dude. And I think that you genuinely have the best intentions, like, every time you rock. And I think that that's something that's admirable. I think that, like I said, you have, I mean, when we put on that event, right, so we put on an event together called Sunday Dinner, which we should probably bring back because that was a dope concept.
Yeah.
And
I'm probably going to do it this year.
You just going to do it? You ain't going to invite me to it? That's what's up. We're not going to do it together? It's all good.
I mean, we're different people.
We are different people. So we definitely bring different people.
Put on a different event, but yeah.
Nah, that's true. I'm just giving you a hard time, bro. Yeah. You can definitely do that on your own. So, but I think that, I actually do focus on those things because our spaces are so small with, like, you know,
focus on them to what end though? Like, what's the purpose of the focus?
Because I think that it's like
what is it actually?
Because when there's so few people, you scrutinize every part of it.
Okay. And then, so at the end of that scrutinization, like what are you left with?
I'm left with seeing the different types of archetypes that can work and be successful in this type of work and in these fields. So I look at like the work that you do. I look at the work that I do and how we go about our work in very different ways. But for the most part, it's the same. We're tracking towards the same type of way. And then I also think about my friends in the hood that didn't get out the hood, but that's like that put a lot of energy in something else and is being as successful just on the wrong side of the law. I think that, I mean, those things, I think about those things a lot. And the reason why, I mean, those things matter so much to me is because if there were, the way I attack the work the way I do is if my friend Donald, who was just a natural entrepreneur, who was just naturally hungry and just tenacious, he was a great football player, like, he could really focus on things that, like, made sense to him. If a few things in his life were different, just a few, not even a whole slew of how he grew up, because we grew up pretty similar, right? But if a few things in his life were different, his life could be completely different. Like, I'm here by happenstance, bro. Like, I am here. I made certain decisions based off, I just didn't like what I saw in certain things for totally selfish reasons. So when I work with young people, I work with the knowledge of saying, hey, you know what? If I show them this one thing, like me taking kids to have sushi is important. The reason why me taking little black boys to go eat sushi is important, regardless if they like it or not, but it's to get them to try different things. Right. Because where I grew up, it was frowned upon to try different things.
Yeah.
Like, I just remember how...
Well, I mean, that's me giving my palm card to a young black kid is important, because it's important for someone in politics to say, you know, you should see yourself in this position.
Definitely. Like, you being black makes a difference.
You have agency to direct your community, and you can do it in this venue if you decide to. Like, this is like your tangible example, right? So whether it's sushi or a palm card, or, you know, however else we want to connect young people to experiences that helped us evolve, right?
Definitely.
Whether I want to suggest that black kids go to a summer program outside of their city that's, like, academically intensive, because it may broaden their horizons. Like, what we talk about with your friend Donald.
Yep.
With Donald, with a slew of other... just young people that grow up in our cities, it does come down to those few different, like, decisions and influences that can set off a whole entire trajectory that can be completely different, you know. So I think we're obviously a part of the same struggle. We have different ways of, I don't know, and I think we're both in unique positions to help young people realize their potential, you know, or get outside of themselves, or be connected to somebody that's,
you know, we should do meaningful. Let's do this. We can put our money together, because I think even putting, if we put a kid on an Amtrak and just send him to, like, San Diego on Amtrak or whatever, just like the importance of getting out of this community and seeing something different, like those types of things, like I can. The things that helped me survive is, like I said, I lived in three distinct regions of the country. Like, Chicago is very different from Kentucky, which is both very different from the liberal bubble that is the Bay Area. Like, this place is crazy.
Yeah.
It still trips me out, right? So, but I think, but just having those experiences put me at a certain type of advantage already. Like, in Kentucky, it was only black and white people that I saw. That's it. It was just black and white. I didn't see an Asian person. I mean, there's more people now, but the community I lived in was, like, strictly black and white.
Yeah.
And so, and then I had friends that were, like, poor, like, trailer park white type folks. You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm talking about, like, you just come out to play with no shoes on. That's just what you're doing. I don't know. You got, like, them some hard feet. So, whereas Chicago had, like, all every single culture, but it's, like, sectioned off. So it's like, this suburb is, like, the Russian suburb, or this is the Italian suburb, and they'll let you know that you've stumbled into, like, the Italian suburb. Like, you probably was trying to go south or somewhere, whereas in the Bay Area, where it's, like, this melting pot and all these different people. But just that experience alone coming here exposes me to different things. Like, we could change a kid's life or multiple kids' lives by putting them on an Amtrak, putting them on a plane somewhere that where they get to kind of go see something and come back or whatever. Like, that's what I'm saying. When I talk about the butterfly effect, that something just that small can change the perception of somebody, right? So, like, me living in the hood, and then I go on, like, a group trip to the Dominican Republic, and I see a different type of poverty that I've never seen before. And the Dominican Republic got money compared to Haiti. Right. So it's like, well, damn, like, so across the wall in Haiti, like, I'm seeing, like, me seeing a caste system in real life, like, where if you Dominican, you white. Like, if you my color, you consider white. And if you Haitian, you black. Uh-huh. And so if you Haitian, you can only work the pools and you can only clean stuff and do all that. Yeah. Whereas you in our suites if you, like, Dominican and talking to us and getting to, like, do those things. Like, those things are life-changing. So
I agree.
So this is another use of this podcast, because now you're balling. So we should find two kids.
Yeah, I'm not, you know.
You will be.
I'm well paid, but my salary's not public.
No, and I'm not gonna make it public. I mean, you an ED, you a CEO. It don't, like, you make it more than $50,000. So, like,
possibly,
whatever. The point is, I'm not gonna put your business out in the streets, Steve. You know what I'm saying? Calm down, B.
You know, before I was okay with saying how much I made because I was.
You don't need to do that. Everybody needs
so,
to know that
it was so little. But we talk.
It was a badge of honor at that point. Now you on the other side. Welcome.
You know, I don't want people. You know,
you bougie now.
Nah, yeah, possibly. But, but the, you know, the investments that I want to make, in youth are the ones that were transformative for me, right? So that's the investment I'm making in my skill and building Mission Bit is because I think through that we can open kids' eyes to a lot of different things.
Brother, what I'm asking you on this program,
yeah,
now that I got you here and it's like taped and I get to refer back to it anytime I want to perpetuity.
I'm running my word, you know.
I think we can find two kids, two little black boys.
Okay.
You can find one, I can find one, and we send them somewhere where they just go and they just chill. They just experience the space. Maybe we join them, maybe we don't. But, like, we put them in a different environment, like two kids that have never been outside of the Bay.
Right.
Like, we can, like, change two lives, bro. And it's not just changing two lives. It's, like, from what they decide to do and, like, we kind of check in with those young people, they're going to change, like, the way their family views things or the when they date and, like, get married or, you know, when they make children. Like, those are things that stick with them. Like, that's a ripple effect. That is a great investment. Yeah. I'm just asking if you want to invest with me, brother.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so.
I mean, Spirit Flights are cheap. I'm just saying. We can figure it out.
Right. So, I mean, I'm going to bring up a couple of things. One, there are so many, like, opportunities like that for our youth that they don't know about or we haven't, you know, connected them to. I was actually talking to a police officer last week. He's a high-ranking officer with the San Francisco Police Department.
Mm-hmm.
Every summer, he takes seven kids from Baby Hunters Point to Africa. He went last summer. He's going again this summer. It's like a week-long trip. He organizes the trip. I'd never heard of it before he told me about it. And, you know, we have the stories of a cohort of young people that went who experiences I haven't really learned about, right? So, like, that exposure opportunity, you know, organizations like Outward Bound do that when they take kids on these extensive camping trips. And there are those summer opportunities that I mentioned. So I'm definitely willing to connect more kids to those opportunities because it's, and that's what we're talking about, like, possibly how we do things differently, right? Because if there's an existing organization...
That's whack.
That's what I'm saying.
You should do both. You do both, bro.
Listen. I'm doing a half Ironman in New Orleans.
I'm asking you to write a check.
I'm taking my three younger cousins.
I'm happy for them.
Three black women who grew up in very troubling circumstance who are now living with their grandmother, who are going to public schools in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. It's going to be their first time on a plane, their first time out of the state.
That's great.
You know, so I'm going to do this half Ironman, right? Mm-hmm. This triathlon. Like, how many black people you know do a triathlon?
I mean, you a different type of dude. So you rode a bike to my house.
Well, I rode a bike to San Diego.
Like, you did, because you a different type of dude. I'm not mad at you. That's great.
But that's what I'm saying, though, is because it's important for me to do stuff like that. So I'm taking them to New Orleans because I want them to see New Orleans. I want them to see colleges out there.
That's great.
Right? But they're also going to see me participate in this triathlon, which is not traditionally a black space, because the potential of them doing that for themselves is, like, real. Like, okay, somebody I know did that. I heard about it. Maybe they do it. Maybe they don't. Maybe they go back to New Orleans. Maybe they won't.
That's fine.
But it's important for me that young people have no barriers whatsoever. I mean, especially young black children. They have no barriers whatsoever. They're not discouraged. They can feel empowered.
That's cool.
And a sense of, like, you know, determination around doing something that's outside of what's classified as black or, like, whatever. So I'm about that. I'm about that life. I do that. You know, I take...
That's cool. Are you done yet? Tell me when you're done. I think that's great.
I mean, don't cut me off because...
Go ahead, brother. I'm going to let you finish.
Because...
I'm not going to Kanye you, bro.
Because this is important, right? Because we're talking about writing the check to, like, give kids an experience.
Yeah.
Which is, like, all well and good. And what I'm saying is, you know, I live my life like that. I'm about that life.
All right, say it one more time, because I don't think the people heard you, that you're about that life.
I'm about that life.
I think I'm about that life, too, but yeah, keep going.
I'm in the streets. I'm about that life. And I want to And there are people who are running organizations and running trip experiences, like this officer I met, who want to take more youth, right? So why not connect our two kids to him and him, those kids participate in what he's doing?
Do both. But what? So that's fine. So let me, one point. I think that that's amazing what you're doing for your family. I think that's hella dope, right? That's super dope. That's what makes you you, right? We both do these little things. Like, I went and bought groceries for families over Thanksgiving because I stood in food lines for like Thanksgiving and Christmas. But those kids' lives are changed just for the fact that you're their cousin. Just for the fact that they have direct connections to you and can see you and to talk to you and can touch you. They're going to be okay. Like, I mean, you got work to do, but you're going to be a part of their life on some level. So I think this New Orleans thing is great. And but you're not going to stop there. You're going to always be able to check in with those kids. You're going to be able to have these conversations with those kids. Moving on to the brother that's doing the Africa thing, I think that's awesome. And I think that we need to find him more people and so he can take whatever his capacity is. I mean, that's not at scale. So he's probably taking, like you said, 5 to 7 kids each year, right?
Yeah.
So I think that's cool, right? That's an awesome experience. What I'm talking about, I want your money so we can take two kids from the hood. I gave to your campaign. You thought I wasn't getting my money back? Uh-huh, is that what you thought? Uh-huh. I want two kids from the hood, bruh. Like, you need to pick.
I already said yes, though.
But I thought you wasn't. Yes. Don't cut me off, because I want to. You just made your appeal. You know what I'm saying? You look real good doing it. That's what's up. I'm always going to support you. I think that's dope.
Yeah.
Put kids in contact with Africa. Send them to Mother Africa. That's what's up. Tell them to come back with a
coupon. But it sounds like you downgrade, like, what I'm talking
about. I'm not downgrading it. I'm not downgrading it. What I am saying.
There's a hint of, like, insult and a lot.
That's
of,
not. Did I insult him? I didn't insult him.
It's like this undercut of, like, you know. Okay, nah, bro. Done yet? Because, like, I had a better idea. And, like.
Bruh, this is the difference. This is our difference. This is how
I'm just trying to understand.
No, I gave you props on that. I think that's dope. The same way, like I said, I do similar things. We can have a pissing contest about how we help kids. It only helps kids.
To do that.
No. But I'm saying, but even if we did, it only helps kids, life. Right? If that's what we're gonna be competitive in, of like who can help the most kids, then
right, let's do it.
Then
let's,
we should do that.
That's the new competition.
But together, I think we can. So I think we can do that. Let's do that. We can make it look however we need to make it. I want to send two kids from the hood. So I want you to get in your San Francisco hood, because I'm not from San Francisco. I'm an Oakland dude. I don't even like San Francisco. So, like, I don't even go over there.
What's up? What's up, SF?
I love you. You should.
What's up, San Francisco?
I mean, yeah, because you like what's up, Prince Oakland? Hakeem over there. It ain't no princes there. You know what I'm saying?
What's up, Oakland? I love y'all, too.
That's what's up. No, you don't. So.
Yes, I do.
And then I will find somebody here in Oakland. Let's put together a criteria.
Uh-huh.
And, like, let's send some kids somewhere.
Is near the lake still Oakland? Is it still considered?
This is Oakland? Definitely Oakland.
Okay.
The helicopters that was flying around this thing last night.
Every bougie black person like you I meet that lives in Oakland.
So ain't everybody that lives in San Francisco bougie at this point? Ain't the houses $1.3 million on average?
That's how we friends. We both bougie, but
I'm not bougie.
Back to my point.
I'm not bougie. All right. Don't put me in that boat with you.
Don't deny who you are, Charles.
I mean, as I sip on this Henny while I'm doing the show.
Yeah,
you feel me?
Yeah, that's the bougie drink.
So this is what we do.
That's black bougie.
We lead by example because that's who we are.
Bougie black.
I be that. That's what's up.
Near the lake.
I am by the lake. I love living by the lake too.
It's a beautiful place. It's beautiful here.
It is beautiful.
I would love to bring my children here.
I mean, hey, it's a nice place. Yeah. I work hard, son. Yeah. So
I love Oakland.
I'm about to buy a house, too. It's working on it. Trying to. It's tough. But I'm going to buy my house in the hood, though.
You will.
But my house is going to be in the hood, though. Unless I can't find it in Oakland. Then I'm going to live out 45 minutes away and with the white folks.
Yeah. So white people. I love y'all, too.
We know you love white people. So, listen.
I love all people.
You do. Anyway, so let's put that together. We can figure it out, man. We can, like, send them somewhere, whether it's on Amtrak, whether it's on, like, a plane, or whatever, even if it's on, like, Greyhound. But, like, put these kids in, like, a different environment. I'm not
putting kids on Greyhound.
I came to California on a Greyhound. Yeah, I was on Greyhound for 3.5 days.
I was on Greyhound when I came up from the bike trip, and, you know, I want anybody we send to have an enjoyable experience.
And, I mean, I want them to have an experience.
Well, you know.
You know what? The experiences that changed my life were not enjoyable. Well, we'll work out the semantics.
It could be a challenging experience. I don't want it to be a challenging travel experience. I don't want people to be.
Is the Greyhound challenging? If we have another Steve-on, option, is the Greyhound challenging though? It's not luxurious, but is it challenging?
Is it challenging? Yeah, it's a bit challenging.
How's it? You sit there. How's it challenging?
It's the if you've been to a Greyhound station recently.
I've been to a Greyhound station. It's not the most.
You know, it's not the most savory place to wait. When you are on the bus, it's like. It's kind of hot and really overcrowded. I'm just saying that if you're talking about
this is putting character money up
to send some kids somewhere, then I want them to get there.
Whatever you put up, I'll match. We gonna match it. Let's do it. We gonna do this. This how Steve and I are about to be competitive in this. We gonna come together and we gonna send two black boys somewhere in the country.
Okay.
We gonna do that.
Why they gotta be boys?
You said what?
Why they gotta be boys?
I mean, see, now you're trying to open up a whole nother little thing, whatever. Girls are important, too. Listen, black girls are important. I'm a black boy, and, like, what I am saying is I am reflecting. Man, it depends on what day you ask me.
Okay.
What I'm saying is I'm trying to, like, put somebody who grew up similar to the situation that I grew up in a situation where they can have, like, a real learning experience, and that could potentially change their lives. If you want to choose a young lady, see, I don't know if we need to send a young boy and a young girl.
Well, you know,
unsupervised into the wilderness.
Yeah, okay. I'm just gonna go along. Okay, two African American males of teenage.
Yeah, high school. Maybe. Yeah. Do we want to do right? Just out. Nah. Let's say we'll think about it.
Okay. And so
because they got to be old enough to be able to go.
Is this a call to action to the wider cold world listener audience?
It can be.
I mean,
I raise money. When I did the grocery thing, I think I raised a lot of money. It was like over a G.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we fed a lot of families.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, we fed a lot of families. However you want to do it. We can work on the details.
Uh-huh.
But we are in partnership. We're going to shake hands. We are in partnership on sending two kids that have not been outside of the Bay somewhere else. And, can we agree with that?
Yeah.
Cool. We're going to shake on it.
All right, cool.
All good. That's what's up.
Hands have been shaken. Yeah.
So, people, we ran over, but it's all good. It was a great conversation. I love Steve-on Cook. Even though I give him a hard time, he gives me a hard time, apparently.
It's all good. It's all love.
I love you, man. Thank you for having me on the show. I got to snap on you, though, because out of love. If I don't love you, I want to snap on you.
I don't think it's really snapping. I think it's just, you know, you just having a conversation.
I mean, bro, I was trying to get a picture of you for so long, but, like, your forehead is shiny. So that's why it took so long on the Instagram. I mean, but I got you.
I know. You know, it's going to be on the cover of that, of the... Of the CEO list, whatever they were.
It's already posted. You the man, bro. You the man. So, you the man. Man, I love you, man. I'm glad you came. Anytime you want to come back, you can. We can Skype you and you can come in. It's nothing.
Thank you.
But I appreciate you. Keep up the good work, man. And since we are competitive in this, like, in this world of how we impact it, then I will see you at the top, sir.
Yeah, I'm waiting for you. I'm up there.
With that, you have been listening to the Cold World Podcast. I will hit y'all next week. Peace.
The Giants play in New York. Forbes, 1, 2, 3. I get money.
You know what it is.
1, 2, 3.
Yeah. I run New York.
It's the $1 billion remix, baby. For real,
come on, man, I'm hot now. Drop down, top down, I got stare. Been around the block, pal, imagine what I got now. The Bentley, the Ferrari, maybe the Bugatti. Range of Maserati, I got them all. Goddamn, my money, my money long. I black out and break a bet on your ass like Barry Bonds. I get it, I'm down for the jokes, line something, I'm with it. I told you I was gon' cake up, I did it. Niggas tryna show me how to ball, man. They tryna buy some Gucci, I'm tryna buy them all. I ain't come to get a little bit, I'm tryna get it all. My new bitch a cool bitch, I'm finna make a spark. Look, my watch is right, my stocks is right. But don't be shocked tonight, if you be shot tonight. Still gutter like a motherfucker. Chipped up, don't be surprised when I grip up. You slip up, you can get it.
Watch me get it. Watch me get it. What you did?
Yeah. I run New York. A lot of money on this record, man.
What you get it?
I like being around money, man.
What you get it?
Old street, the hallway, baby.
What you get it?